Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Alan.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Okay. This is Cindy S. Solomon with the Global Product Management Talk. Delighted to be talking today with W. Alejandro Polanco, or Alex, talking about our previous product management talk on Monday, November 21st, where we discussed overcoming limited resources and unrealistic expectations to ensure product success. Ironically, we had technical issues. Well, more specifically, I had technical issues. My internet connection was down in my whole area. So that really tempered my ability to record our audio conversation as well as to produce the event. Fortunately, the product management community are such diehards and committed to the weekly event that they continued on over Twitter without me. I must report it is actually good to not be indispensable. And also to recognize that this is an important event that people take seriously and they plan for it. And I really appreciate your willingness to keep it going on Monday, Alex, and also to revisit it today to discuss what happened.
It's a little bit of a challenge, but to your point, I mean, I think the product management community, we are definitely diehards and we're used to circumventing roadblocks like this. So it definitely speaks of a great community who's just very strong and very skilled and very resourceful in finding workarounds. So we got it done.
Excellent. I will be reviewing the tweet as we answer the questions that you presented to the community. So let me proceed as if it were a real event. We generally ask people to introduce themselves. We banter a bit before we start with the tweeting. And generally, we have a co-host, either Adrian Tan from Australia or Roger Coven from Texas or various other people who have joined as co-hosts. It certainly adds to have yet another voice keeping it going. So in today's economy, most organizations have strict budget constraints, which limit the amount of resources that can be dedicated to new products and product enhancements. Add to this the fact that most industries are increasingly competitive, and companies that do not keep up and adapt to fast changes find themselves rapidly fading out of existence. The product management professional is becoming the go-to person for everything, ranging from what does the industry want and need, to prioritizing and roadmap management, to what programming language should be used to build it all. We'll be discussing how you can succeed in small organizations and or with limited resources, and how can the jack-of-all-trades product manager ensure product success? Joining us is W. Alejandro Polanco, whose Twitter handle is @Polanco, P-O-L-A-N-C-O, with a W in front of it. He is head of product strategy at Arise Virtual Solutions, Inc. He's a seasoned product management leader with a passion for user experience. Alex has more than 10 years of experience with a solid combination of technology background and business acumen. He drives quantifiable results by orchestration and delivery of complex products in online marketing, cloud-based tools, and e-commerce. And you're joining us from Florida today.
That's right. Beautiful South Florida.
Great. Let me review who joined us for the chat on Monday. Erica L. Anderson, who comes in from Utah, Larry Nikio from Boulder, Jen Roadmap Warrior from Kansas City, Everyone Hates Chris, someone new, Saeed W. Khan, Veronica Figatelix, who is speaking next week, and as we go deeper, I will refer to their tweets specifically. The first question that we discussed was, who dictates how you prioritize what's going to be built into the product?
First of all, I mean, it's an excellent question, and the reason why I thought that it was important, number one, because I wanted to hear what people are saying and hopefully help me come up with better ideas of building and executing on a roadmap for a specific product or for from an organizational standpoint as a whole. But the whole idea behind this question is I really want to have an understanding of what people are thinking of who should drive the product roadmap, who should drive what you get to build as a product manager, whether it's an entire product or just new features and enhancements to an existing product. And really, I mean, I think we got a lot of agreements out there. What I ended up picking up on is that it really depends on what we call the feature set or the product roadmap. traditionally, I mean, obviously the product roadmap is composed of the requirement at a very high level and what the product is going to look like and what you're actually going to end up building and what is it going to be solving for and what that product is going to look like in a year or 2 years or however time frame you want to put forward. But the outset, I mean, the leadership of the organization should really be responsible for putting together the vision with the understanding of what the market is looking for, but just from a strategic point of view, what the vision is for the organization. And then you kind of combine that with, and at least what I found is that best chances for success is you take that vision and combine it with the customer requirements. So you take your key client and figure out what they're looking for from a product, from a solution, a product point of view. You take those two things and combine them, and that should give you a pretty solid foundation for building your product roadmap. I think Larry was the one that came up with it. I kind of said in his tweet that that's dictating is kind of a wrong word. It's really, and I happen to agree with him, it really shouldn't be about who dictates what goes into the roadmap and how it gets prioritized. It's more about who gives you the main content and the main message, basically the features that you're going to be incorporating or building out. And again, I mean, that's really a combination of what the clients are looking for and align that with the organizational vision.
This is actually a key question for why product management is necessary, why it's also so challenging.
Yep, exactly.
Larry McKeo, in his tweet, said that prioritization, in my mind, boils down to return on investment. Reality has a way of interfering with that at times, though.
That is very true.
So to that, you said, good point. So should your clients and our sales team dictate your product roadmap? So you probed and you responded with, against executive priority, have to bring some data to bear. Against key customer requirements, have to ask how much it is worth. Exactly. Now, BrainMates asks further, do your top clients dictate as a competition, or do organization no leaders win out on what should be built? Jen, roadmap warrior, said, what's the best fit for the market and gives you the most bang for your buck according to your KPIs, your key performance indicators? You responded that depending on the executive, the priority may be key customer, though. That's right. And even identifying who your key customer is can be challenging.
Right. And to that point, I happen to agree to a certain extent with one of the tweets that came in that was talking about at the end of the day, it's about the bottom line and how is the revenue going to be coming in and what's the revenue stream. And, you know, to that, then when you start thinking about that, then it literally comes boiled down to your key clients again, because unless your key clients are happy, then obviously you're not going to be generating the right revenue. And then obviously it's a domino effect from there. So then you're not going to get paid and you're not a successful product manager. So when you think about it from that point of view, it's all interrelated.
Adrian had asked, should it be about your KPIs? Or your ROI, your key performance indicators may be different than what your return on investment is. That's a key distinction. Very difficult to how do you determine which is more important? Larry says a good PM has to hold some line or gets run over by a number of stakeholders.
Yeah. Again, I go back to the tweet about the key performance indicators versus the ROI, and I have to argue with that, though, because isn't ROI part of your KPIs? I mean, at the end of the day, we're in it to make some money and or make the organization money, and in turn, obviously, you know, make money for ourselves. Unless you're in a nonprofit org or you happen to be managing a product that is not necessarily looking for, you know, to generate revenue, which is a very rare case.
CEO of Twitter, I said that sometimes your customers are buying something different than what you think you're making. And you have to be responsive.
That's a great quote, and I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Still to this point, Adrian asks, should you build for one customer? But Eve says, aren't development resources always scarce? He's answering the question, a different part of the question.
Right.
Prioritization is based on aligning with objectives, addressing market needs, etc. Jen says, in the KPI versus ROI debate, I guess it depends on how you would define each of those terms. It could be either. And
yep,
so you responded that it's an art. You must balance key clients' needs, your own product vision, market trends, as well as your organization's vision and mission. And Larry agrees resources are always scarce. Adrian asks, are there other ways to prioritize? Jen said, when resources are scarce, so is sanity. So he says prioritization is subjective, to be honest. Some is based on money in the deal funnel, or else it's based on longer-term goals.
That's true, and I honestly think that longer-term goals is really good. Product managers obviously going to have their sights not necessarily on just the next 3 or 6 months. You're actually going to look way further down. Again, as long as you're aligning your strategy with the overall corporate vision, then you're obviously going to try to do the best for both the product and the organization as a whole. So, you know, looking at a product from a long-term point of view, you obviously want to make sure that your strategy fits well, not just the next 3 to 6 months, but 3 to 6 years or even further into the future.
Larry says, in addition to data, you can make some trade-offs by grouping enhancements by themes and customer segments. The previous week, a big discussion about road mapping by themes.
Really about what kind of methodology or framework your organization employs for delivering your products. I think Larry makes a great point when he says that you can deliver products or develop products and obviously deliver at the end based on themes. And I think that's a great strategy, but there isn't one glove that fits all the organization types and every market or every product type. Yeah, themes are a great way to build your product roadmap. And if you can segment your product that way and your feature set that way, I mean, great. It's a hard balance to strike. There's a lot of dependencies and a lot of pieces that are moving.
The E says, account people with unlimited resources are usually the insane ones. Witness wealthy buying jewelry for their pets, etc.
Yeah, that was great. It caused quite a chuckle around virtual room because I know I started laughing literally because when I saw that tweet, it was like it just hit home. I mean, I think we are actually the same ones for being able to deal with having such limited resources and still be able to deliver, obviously. I mean, if we're good product managers and we have a decent track record, obviously that's because in this economy we're still able to thrive, and that's not easy. So we obviously must be the other same ones. And then anybody who's got unlimited resources, I mean, those are the ones that got some serious challenges in front of them and are probably insane.
Larry says, other ways to manage competing priorities is to turn the question back to the customer and have them choose their X or Y of what they consider other priorities. So he says, and the money can't always be quantified. For example, how do you quantify the financials of a good architecture? Sometimes you just need to do what's right.
Yeah, I kind of have a little bit of a difficult time agreeing to that because at the end of the day, I mean, it does still, in my mind, boil down to the success of the product and the success of the organization. And that success is primarily measured by ROI and your financial status. And unless you're making those dollar signs, then product is not considered successful in most eyes. How do you quantify a good architecture? Sure. I mean, you might not necessarily be able to put directly assign dollars to a good architecture, but indirectly, I mean, if the architecture is architected your product correctly or successfully, then the product is obviously going to succeed, and indirectly that architecture is going to translate into greater dollars, additional revenue for the organization. So at the end of the day, I think in my eyes, it still boils down to the revenue-generating piece of your product, and if that's there, then obviously you've succeeded.
Jen Roadmap Warrior suggested a resource from 37 Signals called Build Half a Product, Not a Half-Assed Product. It just speaks to sticking to what's truly essential. Take whatever you think your product should be and cut it in half. Pare features down until you're left with only the most essential ones. Question 2, what steps should product managers take to communicate to clients that their requested feature or features are not coming soon? You said to Saeed that you've been in both situations, the product manager with and without resource constraints. It takes more smart, patience, and grit to be on the former side.
Yeah, I think at that point I'm still talking about the sanity comment about what does it take to really be a good product manager from a little bit of a more philosophical point of view. And I think, you know, at that point we're still kind of talking about with limited resources, if you're able to do all the things that you need to do, then obviously you're the stronger product manager because you're able to bypass all your roadblocks with limited resources and face of adversity. Coming back to the question at hand, communicating your feature set or the future to your clients, I mean, that's a kind of a loaded question in my mind because it's kind of difficult to communicate to your clients, especially if they're your top clients who are looking to see what is coming in the future. Because, I mean, as we all know, and this was actually one of the questions that was asked on last week's talk, I think somebody suggested you should never sell your clients on the future or the features that are coming. You should sell them on what you have today. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. But you also have to combine that with the features that are actually coming. And I wanted to, with this question, I was kind of trying to probe in the community out there and just get some ideas on how do you tell your clients that because of your limited resources and your current challenges, you're not going to be able to deliver something that they might be looking for in the next 3 to 6 months.
Adrian from BrainMate said, tell them it's on the roadmap. Larry said, use the roadmap and explain why the items are on it. You can also throw in cost of the pet feature they want.
Yes, actually, that's a great point because a lot of times the cost will have your clients and the consumer of that specific feature. They'll not necessarily reconsider, but if it's something that is very, very costly, it'll help them put things in perspective. And then they can go back to the drawing board and say, well, I mean, is that a cost that I'm willing to pay for, or at least partially pay for the benefit I am asking for? Because I've been in situations where a client will come back and ask for a feature and not necessarily think of how it's going to get implemented or developed. You know, at the same time, they might not be thinking about the cost associated with it. And once you tell them how much it's actually going to take to build it, then they go back to the drawing board and say, well, maybe it's not that important, and kind of reprioritize that way. So I think that's a great point.
I think that most of us are talking about software products because that's my background. I just assume all of this is relevant to software products. If it's not software, the answers might be different. We have a lot more flexibility, especially given SaaS products, than we had just 5-10 years ago in terms of being able to update products and add in features quicker than it used to be. So I think that the time frames used to be much different, and certainly in manufacturing other products, the answers would be different.
I agree. That's a great point, actually. And I think we're, for the large majority of the community that we see in this venue here, it's, I think we all kind of think in software or technology products kind of terms, and that's why we're all biased, buy into that sort of flexibility. But I think you're right. I mean, there are different industries out there that obviously, you know, either are a lot more heavily regulated or have strict mandates that might come down even from government or even the booming clients. One thing I can think of is, for example, like the healthcare industry. You've got a mandate that you need to go into electronic documentation, for example, and that's not necessarily coming from you, but from some government regulatory body that giving you that mandate, and you as the client is asking for that, then you really have no choice but to ask for it. And if you have to pay for it, then you have to pay for it. So that, I think you're right. The point might change drastically when we're talking about other industries that are not software or technology products.
So Larry says, I try to be as upfront as possible. Can a compromise be worked out or another feature supersede the request? And again, we're still talking about what steps can we take to communicate to clients if they're requesting features and not coming soon. You asked, does the roadmap have deliverable dates? Clients will want to see and hear when their features are coming.
Yeah, that's a key point. Any client looking at your roadmap and trying to make a decision of whether to stick with your product or maybe go to a competitor, they'll want to see, when do you plan on having at least some kind of window, some kind of time frame of when you're planning on augmenting and improving the product.
I'm also assuming that these clients that would have this much interaction are excellent clients. They're not, if they're having that much transparency into the product development plans, they definitely are important clients.
Yes.
The general public or people who are just researching the product, you definitely don't want them to know what's coming because they'll say, all right, well, I'll wait to purchase until those features are there.
You're very right on that. I mean, that's a great point. It's either these are your key clients, and that, I think before I kind of made the comment of what types of clients are we talking about here, because obviously they have to be your top tier, like, you know, 1 through 5, you've got a list of at least a few dozen clients. Or either that, or you're a very small organization and, you know, you really have 1 or 2 clients, in which case you really have no choice but to, if you're sharing it with your clients, then obviously you're sharing it with 100% of your client population. So I wholeheartedly agree with that. I mean, I think you have to be careful on who we're talking about here as far as clients. You don't want to share it with everybody.
Jen of Roadmap Warrior says, it depends on whether not coming soon actually means on the roadmap, or it means this contradicts the product vision. Larry says, roadmap dates become vaguer as you go out in time. I can tell you when for the next quarter or the next 2 quarters at most. So he mentioning that he had made a tongue-in-cheek comment earlier that he has seen the roadmap used to deflect a short-term request. So I have to go back to see whether he was referring to his point that constraints force good decision-making and trade-offs, and help focus on what really is important. Oh, I think earlier he said just the steps a product manager should take to communicate to clients is just to tell them it's on the roadmap. He was saying that tongue-in-cheek. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another thing. Sarcasm and humor doesn't necessarily translate directly in text.
Yes, and that's why it's certainly important, you know, all the kind of follow-up and probing that you do when we're actually doing it with speaking or when we're actually at the live event itself.
Yes. Adrian of BrainMate says, seems that we are only talking about B2B clients, business to business. What about B2C customers, business to consumer?
That's a great question, but when you look at it, I think there really is not that much delineation between the two. I think when we talk about clients, especially when we say who should be helping you dictate what goes into your product roadmap from a backlog point of view and feature set coming up, there really is no delineation between the two. I mean, a client is a client is a client, and if we're talking about key clients, it can be an end consumer if that you are producing a consumable product that's going out to end customers, or you are, to that point, you are developing a product that's going to be consumed by another organization, in which case we're talking about B2B. But I think when I look at it, and love to be challenged or corrected here, when I look at a client, I mean, from based on the context of what we're talking about here, and we say key clients, it's either your consumers who might give you, you might run a survey, and they might give you the results of that survey, might tell you what feature set the community is looking for from your product, and it's the same thing when you actually go out and do client interviews and sit down with them to collect requirements.
So he asked, Adrian, can you give an example of the B2C feature request scenario? For example, do B2C product managers have that level of interaction with customers? So I think he's making a similar point. Is there a difference? Larry says, in B2C types of situations, I think it is what the company determines is important in the market. And Adrian responds that it's through social media channels. That's how they're getting responses from the market. And Veronica says, thanks for including the B2C part. She's trying to think of an example as well. Larry says, B2C instances don't carry so much weight and are too varied as opposed to B2B, where one sales is large. Good distinction.
That's a good point.
So he says, regarding via social media, okay, but is there an obligation to commit on futures in B2C to a specific customer? Jen says, depending on the type of product and your target, crowdsourcing can help balance internal objectives with customer requests. Veronica says that B2C information comes from surveys of communities, and we can probably deduce from that information what features they're asking for.
Yep.
The same time, there was an underlying conversation. There were two conversation paths going on here. One about having different roadmaps for an internal and external audience, and this other one about communicating to the B2C market. Now,
yeah,
Adrian
yeah.
says people want more engagement, so therefore, I think she's making the point that there is an obligation to commit on features in the B2C. Going deeper on that, regarding B2C features, it's not a commitment, but don't we want to please our customer if we can? Going back to the discussion of external versus internal roadmap, you suggested a resource which I have added to our pack of links about providing a product roadmap to customers. I think it came from pragmatic marketing. When you want to communicate a certain message internally with more details and post it out to client base. At this point in the transcript, we were a half hour in and I was able to jump in, and it's very interesting, as a end user of participating in the event, it was quite overwhelming because I didn't know what question we were on. I didn't know what was the context of what was being discussed. It was actually a good experience for me to see what it's like for people coming in without any orientation.
Talk about being a very resourceful product manager. And again, I think I go back to what I was saying earlier at the end when we started. It's about being able to just jump in and not being shy about grabbing the bull by the horns and try to figure your way around and understanding what people are talking about, what the subject matter is. Literally jump in at that point and you know, kind of taking over, which is, again, it's about being a good product manager. I mean,
right.
Strength is definitely it's key.
I think of our weekly talk as a mini product camp discussion. You mentioned that it's even more than that. It's an opportunity to practice skills. Still talking about regarding B2C see, you always want to please a customer, but there is less reliance on one specific customer. And you suggested that Quora is a great tool for helping with this, and you've used it in the past to help build priority and vision alignment.
Indeed. I think Veronica was one of the ones that suggested doing surveys. I look at that as an extension to that comment, because it's really about engaging your typical customer, typical consumer, and, you know, what better tool than to do some kind of social media where you're basically posting a question and seeing what kind of answers you're getting, and then build a story based on those answers. So you get, say, 100 or 200 or whatever many answers, and then just kind of try to build a story around that. I mean, I've actually built requirements documents just by talking to people and surveying and posting questions online and seeing what comes back.
I've started using Quora as a promotional vehicle, another way to extend the life of content. I realize that I can answer questions with content that already exists. The issue I find with it in terms of getting feedback is the timeliness of it. Won't get feedback quick enough if there's a deadline. So Eve says that agree on engagement, but does that mean that B2C product managers should publicly commit or not to upcoming features and products? Question 3, when resources are limited, it's easy to fall into reactive mode and let your roadmap fade away. Share your tactics to stop this.
I feel like this was a great question, and it got a great deal of feedback. Really appreciate what everybody had to say, because I think everybody's got their own tactics and their own tools that they use to try to make sure that they stay on point and they stay focused on their roadmaps. Because it is, when you have a lack of resources, extremely easy for you to basically fall into that reactive mode where you're not necessarily planning and doing what product manager should really be doing, and instead just basically get consumed by putting out fires on a day-to-day basis. I thought that this was a great question. And again, as with some of the other ones, I was trying to probe for engagement and trying to probe for some of the answers, and maybe help me determine what most people are doing out there. Because I mean, I see myself in this situation very, very often.
So Saeed says, in response to not falling into a reactive mode, he says it's always about prioritization and alignment to objectives. If resources prevent reaching those objectives, then it's a problem. Jen says, I'm trying to think how to answer that, and so it'll fit inside a tweet. Veronica says, focus on quality. I mean, just stick to the core product proposition. What's happening, by the way, on the side is Veronica said, focus on quality. I mean, just stick to the core product proposition. Keep prioritizing, but keep developing. Larry says, you have to get out of the office and step away. It could be a customer visit or attending a conference. Adjust perspective.
I thought that was such a great point. I certainly agree. I mean, I wasn't thinking about that immediately. As soon as I asked the question, I was like, what could I possibly contribute to this? Because, I mean, other than just planning and making sure that you stick to your plan and almost plan on a daily basis and make sure that you're not falling into that reactive mode. And your plan on a daily basis includes research, interacting with your customers, and making sure that you're aligning with product and organizational visions and all the good stuff that we do as product managers. I wasn't thinking about this point. So when Larry put that on there, I was like, that's actually a key point. It's true. I mean, you know, you remove yourself from the day-to-day activities and just basically be out of the office for a day or two and go meet with clients and get perspective from outside of the office. That's great. I mean, it's almost like, you know, step away from your desk and you'll get the idea. Solutions will come to you.
Steve Blank, who wrote Crossing the Chasm, he talks about being out of the office a lot. That's where PMs should be, which is almost like being a detective.
Indeed.
Veronica says, if resource restriction prevents product objectives, then maybe we have to kill the product. And Larry says, agree, focus, ruthlessly focus on what matters. There's still a sub-conversation going on about B2B, B2C, and I assume that the people involved in it have B2C customers, so responses. Intentionally loaded question. So she does say, you may have to be reactive, especially if your product depends on other people's technology. So budget a little for it, but focus on vision. That's another good point. If you're making changes that require them changing their foundation around your product, not to mention the ecosystem of your partners and everyone else, that will affect your roadmap and your new features.
That's true.
We should include them. Adrian says customer interviews, visits, they keep you on focus and on track. You say be surgical with your daily calendar. You plan your day with meetings and tasks and block out time to strategize. Wow, you actually put time on your calendar to strategize Do you go in a room by yourself with a whiteboard to do that?
Wow. So are you looking at me with a camera or something? That's exactly what I actually do. In one of the main projects that I manage has a conference room that is dedicated specifically to it, and nobody else in the organization can book that room. I mean, that room is specifically for that project. And I make sure that I go in and block some time in that room. It's got a huge board, one of those boards that actually takes a picture of whatever you write, and then you can actually email it to yourself or just kind of upload it to a shared drive. I don't know what those boards are called, but it's got one of those in there, and it's great because I actually plan time on my calendar and dedicate time to actually go in there, whiteboard ideas, build mind maps, if you will, and then, you know, just that's my strategy building time. And when I say be surgical with your calendar, I mean, that's kind of what I do. It kind of learned very early on. And I think it was actually like Seven Habits or something like that, one of those books that speaks about this. It's plan daily and make sure that you stick to that plan, right? So I come in on a daily basis, and the first thing I do is make sure that I have a plan for that day. And obviously, you know, calendar has to be very fluid. As a product manager, you have to be able to move things around and prioritize on a whim. But it's about planning for your day, make sure that you have your tasks and everything that you plan on doing for that day. And then obviously, you know, again, blocking time so that you're not, your calendar is not filled up by meetings on how to put out fires and resolve ongoing issues. I mean, if I can delegate that and have somebody else in my team address those issues, then I try my damnedest to make sure that I stick to that plan and go into a room and just build strategy or do market research or put a client on a speakerphone and do some interview, sticking to that plan.
Veronica mentioned he's from Sydney, Australia. Apparently, Veronica knows him because she's saying he would say brutal focus. Roger Coggin, who I hadn't seen him earlier in the discussion, he piped in with a quote from Reason Trout: the most powerful concept in marketing is owning a word in the prospect's mind. Now, I'm not sure what he's referencing, but I think that is relevant at all times.
Saw that tweet. Love to get, you know, a little bit more context around it from Roger specifically, but the way I took to mean is you've got great power under your belt or in your sleeves if you own a word in client strategies. As you think about, like, what's your client's vision or mission statement, if there's at least one piece or one tidbit in there that you actually can take ownership of, it involves you, and it speaks to you directly as a provider of solutions to that client, then you're golden. I mean, that's kind of like how I took that to mean.
It got a lot of retweets. So he must have been in a very good mood on Monday. His response was, surgeries can be botched, and let's not discuss the military oxymoron, quote, surgical strike.
When I saw that, I was, I was actually going to start having a whole other conversation about that, but then decided, you know what, in the interest of staying on focus and brutal focus, as Veronica said, try to make sure we stay on point.
Question 4, how do you build go-to-market strategies without bypassing steps and teams and ensure that your strategy is not obsolete by the time you get to market?
This is actually a great question, I thought, because as I'm thinking of the day-to-day activities and everything that I do, most product managers have on their plates, it's they realize that when you're building a product plan and trying to execute on that plan, your timeline may not necessarily match what your clients might be looking for or what the market is looking for or even what the organization itself is mandating. A lot of times they might be looking for a shorter timeline and you're trying to fit as many things into that product plan as you can possibly fit. How do you make sure that you stay on task with that product plan and deliver on time? By the time you deliver, obviously, you're not too late to the market where you're already almost irrelevant because the market is overly saturated. And there's all kinds of situations out there, and, you know, I'm sure that there's a wealth of examples. But start thinking about that, and it's like, well, what steps, are there any steps at all that can be maybe shortened or skipped entirely, or what tactic, how do people address situation like that, really trying to gauge how other people would sort of handle that? And I think a lot of people came back and there's really no way around it. And there's a lot of steps that are in a product plan that really can't circumvent things like analysis, interaction with your marketing team or design team, and obviously development and QA, if we're talking about software and delivery and all those steps. I mean, they literally have to be there.
Jen said, another of the benefits of starting small is that you don't take too long to get to market, and you can keep your finger on the pulse. So he says, by understanding what you are doing and why, and ruthlessly gathering market intelligence to course correct. Veronica says, OMG, that's a tough one. Weekly meetings and including frontline staff on my GTM project, go-to-market project, they hear my customer.
Yeah.
So the frontline staff, I assume, would be customer service. customer response. Veronica says, it is so tempting to skip steps when time to market presses. she says she's guilty of skipping steps. Adrian agrees that she likes to start small and test the concept. That way you can do it well. Your answer is, don't skip steps in SDLC, but between meetings, fire drills, etc., it's difficult not to. Software development lifecycle, you're saying, don't skip steps in the software development lifecycle, but skip steps between meetings. Right, it's really difficult not to skip steps.
Really no way to circumvent the process. For those of us that have tried it in the past, we know from experience what the repercussions can be, and they can be dire. They can literally make your product fail entirely.
As a matter of fact, today, Cranky Product Manager did a blog post. She is back from maternity leave. If you don't follow her, I definitely recommend following.
I do.
She's excellent.
Do.
And she was talking about when she was out on leave, they shipped a product and they didn't look at the notes. I guess the user notes or the back-end internal notes that they shipped with the product. They happened to list everybody's, all the contact information of all the emails that people had interactions about the feature. So it's a big problem. They
yep.
skipped a step QA on all the content being shipped.
Exactly. And that's what I was talking about. So it sounds like she's got some reason to be cranky.
Oh, yeah. She always has good reason. Q5, what is the appropriate percentage of time a product manager should allocate to industry research given the amount of tactical tasks that the product manager has?
The operative word is should. I kind of went against what everybody else was saying, because I think, and just kind of reading over the tweets, you can tell that everybody was allocating or is allocating very low percentage. People are talking anywhere between like 15, I think the highest was maybe 30%. Again, I think that's the norm. Unfortunately, that's what we all get bogged down into dealing with the other things that are outside of what we as product managers should be doing on a day-to-day basis. But again, the operative word being should, ideally, how much time should you be allocating to building your strategy and building that roadmap and that product vision? I try really, really hard to make sure that I'm dedicating as much time as possible to it, and in my ideal situation, I dedicate probably anywhere between 60 to 80% to that. Which again, you can see from the tweet, literally almost contrary to what everybody else is doing on a day-to-day basis.
Veronica said 15 to 20%. I would say is what I try to do. So he said, it completely depends. You shouldn't assume that a single product manager does all the research alone. Speaks to how many products you're responsible for and how big an organization and how much respect product management is given in your organization.
Exactly.
Adrian at BrandMates agrees with Saeed. Product managers should share insights, also should leverage off research from other departments such as marketing and sales. You'd say that it's fundamental to building strategy and maintaining the roadmap. A good PM considers this a top priority, and you said 40%, which was amazing to me.
Yeah, exactly. I think I said 80% before. I was late to tweet, because he was saying that at times he had spent 80%. And to me, that was, way too much. But from what I do on a day-to-day basis, I mean, 40% is ideal. That's where I try to hit. It's been as low as 10%. But ideally, I try to stick to at least half my time somewhere around there, somewhere between 40 and 50%, really building strategy, research.
I have a question that I don't know if it was brought up. Within that 40%, how much is spent with the current customers, with potential customers, and beyond that, in the competitive space?
That's actually a great question, but I think it probably would have extended our talk. That can be a subject almost in itself.
Right. We have talked about voice of the customer, and I remember that being an issue of contention of who was the customer. Someone was saying that potential customers and not your customers, you have to be listening to their voice as well.
Exactly.
Okay, to get back to Jen, Roadmap Warrior said she stumped on the number, but it could also depend on where you are in the life cycle. So more research for the go-to-market, less but continual for later versions. So depending on where the product is, depends on how much research is required.
That's actually a very, very good point. I mean, you know, if you're in the ideation, I guess, phase where you're trying to really come up with what the requirements are and what the product should be solving for, then obviously you're going to spend a lot more time as opposed to when the product is actually being developed or tested, then, you know, you're probably going to roll up your sleeves and get down on the trenches as opposed to strategizing and doing research. You've got a very good point there.
So he said, as you mentioned earlier, that at times he spent more than 80% of his time doing that, but 40% would be great. Overall, for him, it's closer to 10 to 15%. And I would venture to assume that when he was spending 80%, it had to do with a new product,
right,
that he could allocate that much time and make that a priority.
Yeah, it was another tweet after that week.
Yeah, he said, on second thought, it's probably 20% or so WRT market research. What is WRT?
I really think that the more we start thinking about this, it's actually, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people really spend a little bit more time thinking about how much time they actually put into market research. Be surprised if the large majority of people wouldn't come back and say that it's actually greater than what they initially thought, just like Saeed did. Because when you start thinking about the fact that, you know, you're spending time on the phone, you're spending time on the web, researching what your competition is doing, what social media, visiting clients. I mean, I consider all of that obviously market research. So if you think about all that and put it into the market research bucket, it's probably greater than most people initially would suggest.
That's an excellent point, because some of those things I do thinking that I'm having fun when I'm actually doing market research.
Exactly. My point exactly. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting there, you know, going through tweets about a certain hashtag or a certain subject matter that I'm following and not realize that, wait a minute, this is actually market research. This is stuff that, you know, in the back of my mind, I am building a list of tasks or product backlog, if you will, that I may pull out of my sleeves later on and actually convert it into official requirements.
Definitely in agreement. People don't spend enough time, not a step to take lightly. Jen had asked perhaps an unrelated question, but she was curious, how big are people's product management team, for example, people versus product. I'm not sure she got any responses during the event. A lot of retweets. You suggested another resource about smaller organizations in the product development process. It's from the B2B Business Hub. How smaller companies should handle new product development process. Said it's a difficult question to answer, but it goes right to the topic of limited resources. For example, 3 products per product manager.
At that point, I mean, I kind of said the first thing that came to my mind, and that's based on my current role and my current experience, right? So we've got myself, we've got 2 people, 3 people actually now on my team, and when they're looking at these products and the, you know, the roadmap and the strategy and, you know, how many products they're actually managing, you, when you get down to the bottom of it, it averages out to about 3 products per PM. You know, that's kind of a loaded question as well, because it also depends on how big the market is and how big that product is, right? So if it's something small, then obviously you can handle multiple ones. Now, you know, if it's something huge where you've got some key clients and you've got some KPIs tied to it, and obviously, you know, the company depends on it from a revenue stream point of view, then obviously you need to be dedicating yourself 100% to just that one product. So it's a wide range.
And so I'm reviewing the transcript, and I was talking about the technical difficulties, and a point was made that product managers are flexible and versatile, and we can carry on even when things aren't working quite well. Next week, Veronica is talking about product portfolio. So we will address some of the issues we were talking about in terms of how many products and where they are in the life cycle.
Excellent.
The global product management talk community demonstrates best of the breed. So I am very thankful for the opportunity to have you circle back around to go through this. This is quite valuable for me to be able to get in deeper without the pressure of managing 3 other things at the same time.
Yes.
I also find that because I'm hosting, it's hard for me to also participate in the content.
I have no idea how you do it.
So thank you very much for your time. Because we have a global community, not everyone will be celebrating with a turkey on Thursday, but I hope you have a great turkey or whatever celebration in Florida.
Thanks. You too. I mean, this has been a very, exciting opportunity. It's been a ton of fun, and I actually learned a lot going through this. So thank you so much for having me and planning it and getting back around one more time to make sure that we executed it properly.
Excellent. Thanks for your time.
It's been my pleasure, Cindy. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Take care.